And we are just getting word now that Governor Inslee is going to be holding another COVID-19 briefing this afternoon. It is going to happen at 2 o'clock. He's going to be updating us on how the state is helping workers and businesses dealing with the pandemic. And, of course, you're going to hear that briefing live during the Dory Monson Show here on Cairo Radio. Also, the information that we know of as of this morning, the total number of COVID cases in the U.S. is at just over 202,300, and nearly 4,500 deaths have been reported. The last update from our state's health department, though, says we've had nearly 4,900 cases and 195 deaths. But again, that has not been updated since March 28th. And apparently our state health department is having some technical difficulties. But what we did hear from the COVID task force yesterday is that Washington is really leading the country in terms of what is going right. You know, it's like best case scenario in a horrible situation, that the model showed that the rise of increase in the number of cases with the last data that was available showed that we were starting to level off or just slow down, at least in the number of cases that were being reported.
Right.
Still going up, but slowing down the rate. President Trump warned yesterday that we are all going to be facing a very grim couple of weeks ahead. And he talked about tens of thousands of deaths likely from coronavirus. There was from 110,000 to 230,000, but he is still resisting growing calls for a national stay-at-home order to stem the spread of the disease.
All right. Well, as we continue to go through all the news, and we try to give you news, and we try to give you some opinion, and we try to give you some laughter and some levity, but at the same time, we also try to bring on experts, because someone who can help better understand this and help us ask questions about this. And we've actually had this gentleman on our show at the beginning of this global pandemic. And then, of course, here we are bringing him on now. He is the director of Meta Center for Pandemic Preparedness and Global Health at the University of Washington, Dr. Peter Rabinowitz. Dr. Peter Rabinowitz, thank you so much for joining us.
Good morning.
Good morning. I want to go right into it. Again, thank you. Personally, what are you watching most closely right now with all of this?
Well, we're watching the amount of hospital capacity that we have, because that is the whole reason we're doing this social distancing. We're not going to make COVID go away all by itself. We're trying to hold on to the hospital capacity for beds, for ICU beds, for ventilators. And we're watching it on a national level. We're watching it on a state-by-state level. And because one of the biggest problems could be when the health systems get overloaded and there's no respirators for patients. There's no place to put them. And so we're watching that closely. And as you mentioned, there is some good news from Washington that some of the projections are somewhat better than they were a few weeks ago. And that as we move into the next 2 weeks, when we think things are going to peak, it looks like in Washington state, we're not projecting a huge shortage of beds and ventilators and ICU beds. We're skating close to the limit of what we have available, and hopefully we can keep on that trajectory and not exceed our hospital capacity.
Dr. Rabinowitz, I'm going to keep my questions personally here to the state of Washington. I know that we can sit here and talk about what's going on national and whatever, but I want to try to keep it specifically to that. And so I know those are the things that you're watching closely with the hospital beds and everything like that. When it comes to the state of Washington, right, you're hearing all of the good news, and outside of the beds and everything, what are you most concerned about here?
I think I'm concerned about people burning out. I think that even with that good news, we're still in a phase where the number of deaths are continuing to per day or accumulate are continuing to rise, and we're expecting to see that rise over the next 2 weeks, and then ideally start to level off. So I think it's really important that people, as we can, you know, even if you hear the good news, but then you still hear about more cases and you hear about you know, tragic cases of deaths and things, that you don't get discouraged and you don't stop doing what you're doing, and that you keep doing everything you can to prevent transmission, and that realize that the rise is not going to go on forever. We are going to get to the peak of this, but it looks like we've got a couple more tough weeks ahead of us.
What can or what is being done to help prevent some of that, I don't want to say burnout, but I mean just pure exhaustion among those who are on the front lines?
There's a number of strategies trying to, communication, trying to make just respite available, counselors available, make sure everybody knows that this stress is acknowledged and that people need to seek help during, you know, just taking little breaks during the day. For the healthcare workers who have to be in the ICUs and the emergency rooms, they absolutely need to take breaks at the end of their shifts and things. For everybody else who's just kind of sheltering at home and having a whole different kind of work pattern where there just aren't the usual breaks in the pattern, it's so important to take time for mental health breaks and do something healthy and spend time with somebody who's close to you, is not related to work, and just try to realize that we're all going through this together, and it is a major dislocation for everybody, but it is so important that we do self-care at this kind of time.
That is Dr. Peter Rabinowitz from the University of Washington joining the G and Ursula show. There's no vaccine yet for COVID-19, and we're learning about the flattening of the curve. We're learning about the potential of how long it will stay around and how long we might have to do this. But with no vaccine and then the possibility of kind of going back to our normal lives, what are the chances that COVID-19 coming back tougher the next time?
I think the chances are good. There's a lot of people infected, but there's a lot of people not infected, and there's a wide world for the virus to move around in. And so there's definitely the possibility that this will keep circulating in the human population, and that we need to develop that vaccine as soon as possible and really have that as part of our armamentarium. We are working quickly to try to develop and validate and do trials on therapeutics, on medications that seem to be working. And there are a large number of investigative trials going on. So we should have a better handle on cures fairly soon. We're also, improving the technology for the testing at the same time. So we'll continue to improve our testing. We'll continue to improve our treatment options, but it is critical that we develop a vaccine, because we do have to expect that this is very likely possible that it's going to continue circulating and come back up again.
Doctor, there's a lot I know that scientists are learning now about the virus itself. And I remember there was some kind of question earlier if you can build immunity. If I were to get it now, would I still be able to get it again, like let's say in the fall or the winter?
Yeah, so that's a great question. We definitely don't know the answer for sure. We're still developing antibody tests that can help us look at that, and we need to look at more people who've been infected, have gotten better, and then what is their experience after that. We're hoping that some immunity lasts, and that if you've had it 1 year, you are not going to get it again or as badly the next year. Many viruses are like that. You get it and you have immunity for a long time, something like measles. At the same time, some viruses that change a lot, like influenza, show that you can get it 1 year and the next year the virus is a little different and you get sick all over again. So we're still figuring out how this coronavirus is going to behave that way.
What about wearing masks? What about all of us, like even those not in the healthcare facility? Like, should we, if I come outside or if I go to the grocery store, what is your opinion on everyone in the United States wearing masks?
I'll tell you my personal opinion. First of all, just reinforce that we have to prioritize masks for the healthcare workers and the first responders, people at the front lines who absolutely need the best protection. We don't want to do anything to interfere with them getting the protection they need. At the same time, we previously didn't push masks a lot because we said the risk is low in the general population. There's not much transmission going on. Now we have a sense that there's a much more substantial amount of community transmission going on. And so I think this we should reevaluate masks. I think that if somebody feels like they want to wear a mask, it is probably not providing a great amount of protection, but it may provide some, and that's a good thing. And so I think people should think about it. There's also the thing that if more people wore masks, there wouldn't be any stigma of wearing a mask. Right now, if you go out and you're wearing a mask, some people might think you're wearing it because you're infected and you might be stigmatized. But if more people wore a mask, then there wouldn't be that stigma, which is great. And so I think because of getting possible protection from even a homemade mask, or just a mask that doesn't interfere with the healthcare supply, you might be giving yourself some protection and you're reducing stigma, and that's a good thing. The things too that you got to be careful with is that if you're touching your face all the time and things, you may be really negating the effect of the mask. Some people are claustrophobic. And you don't want to give yourself a false sense of security,
right,
and wear a mask and then just go up and get really close to a whole bunch of people and interfere with the social distancing measures. So there's some downsides you got to be aware of. But on balance, I think there's growing thinking that there could be some advantages to just making it a more common thing to see people on the street with masks.
Yeah, you know, something is better than nothing at all, and you don't have to have that medical grade if you want to even have just a teeny bit of protection. Another thing that we have been talking about this morning, Doctor, is that we haven't gotten new numbers from the state health department because of problems with their disease reporting system. Are we expecting that to be fixed anytime soon? Because it seems like you need those numbers to see how well you're doing.
I think there's some active work trying to fix that. In the meantime, we do have the projections through the healthdata.org website that is giving us some sense of what should be going on. I think that all our public health systems probably deserve more funding than they've had in the past to be able to really handle something like this. I know there's active work trying to fix any problems with the Washington State system, but we're doing so much better than we did 10 years ago with H1N1 influenza that went all around the world, and none of our data systems could really keep up with it by and large. And we're doing a much better job now, but this is still putting a huge load on the typical public health system that just doesn't deal with so many cases so fast. And we're reaching, I think, the limits of what these systems are really designed to do. So there's active work to fix the problems, but it's definitely stressing the systems.
Dr. Peter Rabinowitz from the University of Washington joins the G and Ursula show. And it's all over the news in regards to them predicting the possibility of 100,000 to 200,000 deaths in the United States. And Dr. Rabinowitz, right now, the death total, unfortunately, is a little over 4,000 right now currently. I believe right in New York State alone, I think they have close to 2,000 of the 4,000 here in the United States. Dr. Rabinowitz, I seriously cannot wrap my mind around it. So can you help us better understand those numbers? Does that mean that with New York going the way that they're going, and right now there's a lot of, not that the numbers aren't really as heavy in like the middle of America and everything, does that mean that they're kind of predicting that there will be states in middle America that will kind of look like New York? Is that kind of where they're getting those figures from?
I think there's potential for more hotspots, absolutely. And it's a big country. It takes a while for the virus to move everywhere, but there's a lot of places where the intensity is still moving toward what we've seen in New York. And then there's some spots like in Albany, Georgia, where particular groups are getting together and having even higher rates. So I think that we're definitely for the next 2 to 3 months going to see other hotspots develop and have potential problems of really getting overwhelmed, just like New York. So we have to take every situation like New York is a definite warning to every place else that this could happen where you are. There's no reason that this can't happen in many other places in the country.
Dr. Rabinowitz, you just mentioned real quick, you just said for the next 2 to 3 months. In your opinion, how long do you think, like, for example, I'll leave it this, Major League Baseball and all some of the sports and everything, it kind of gives a barometer. Do you think that Major League Baseball will happen this year?
Gosh, you love asking me really impossible questions to answer. I wish I knew. I just think we had big problems with NBA and NHL, and we're rolling right into baseball season. So I think there's going to be disruptions to the baseball season. I don't know about total cancellations, but we're definitely disrupting the season.
2 to 3 months. So you do you think into August?
I think into June, July, we're going to be heavily dealing with COVID issues.
Doctor, just to try to end on a hopeful note, because we were feeling optimistic, at least, I mean, as we're bracing for what we're going to be seeing over the next couple of weeks, that there are things that are happening right here in Washington, and people are doing great work to make this disaster, you know, not as bad as it could be. And I just want you to speak to that, to continue to give us hope.
Yeah, I'd say up until, you know, there's never been in the history of civilization that I know of as much of a worldwide effort to do social distancing and do something about this epidemic. So on the one hand, people are cooperating around the world in this effort in a way that we've just never faced a global threat like this before. And it's absolutely amazing to see. And the national level and the state level and the city and county level, it is incredible to see the cooperation. And I really see it in Seattle, people taking this seriously. The stores are closed. The roads are empty. There's really something going on where people are working. And previously, we had, you know, if you asked us 3 months before, we said, well, we're not sure social distancing is works that well, and it's a good idea, but we don't have proof. And I think now we're starting to get evidence that we've never had before about what a concerted effort can really do. So it's a huge credit to everybody on an individual basis, everybody at state and local and federal levels trying to make this kind of mass change. And it just shows the power of our civilization, our society, that we can make changes like that without it being totally mandatory. We're not a totalitarian country where it has to be all mandatory. We're doing a lot of this because we realize it's the right thing to do. And I see a lot of hopefulness that we can, you know, we've totally changed so many things about our daily life because we see the threat. And that is an incredibly hopeful thing. And I think it's showing some benefit. And we just have to make sure we make the most of that benefit and get and ease the pain of the economic pain at the same time.
That is Dr. Peter Rabinowitz, Director of Meta Center for Pandemic Preparedness and Global Health at the University of Washington. Dr. Rabinowitz, we really appreciate you taking the time to join our show.
I really appreciate the opportunity. Thanks a lot.
Okay, that's Dr. Rabinowitz there. Ursula, that's why you on the show. See, I noticed I was going down a rabbit hole. I was going deep. And I was going deep. And then you pulled me back out of it by asking him about hope. And then you got him to talk about positive things. Because I was gone. I was about to fall out of my chair. And you know what I mean? Like, it's sometimes when you dig into this topic, it can get a little depressing.
It is.
A lot of depressing.
Yeah, and it's okay to have those roller coasters of emotions, and we're all dealing with it differently, and that's okay.
Yeah. It's always the best when I'm asleep. Seriously.